Monday, July 7th. This is Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Kevin McCory in for Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
So, Kevin, today is day 7 of the DC 33 Blue Collar Workers Union strike. And Philadelphia's trash, it is piling up, okay? And in some neighborhoods, it's already a smelly eyesore. And it's causing people some stress.
It's all people are talking about right now in the city.
Yeah, I'm seeing pictures all over my social media timelines. But seeing all of this got us here at Studio 2 thinking. The average American produces about 4.5 pounds of trash a day. A day, three times the global average. And so today on the show, we're asking, why do we produce so much garbage? And what can we do about it? And we have a couple experts who are going to talk about the politics of waste in Philadelphia, the nation, and beyond. And we hope that you will participate in the conversation. So our questions of the day are this. Do you try to limit how much trash you produce? And do you want to reduce your household waste? If so, what are your tips for doing that? You can give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And Kevin, I can tell you this, as we are being told to take our trash to a dump site that's a couple miles away from home, it really, you got to put it in your car and you got to gather it. And you're just like looking around like, how can we lower the number of bags of trash? And so I think it's a perfect moment for us to do a little bit of a reset and really just think about how much stuff we throw away.
Because this is a show topic as a team. We've kind of been kicking around for several weeks, even before the strike was even much talked about. And we've been kind of looking for an opportunity to do the show. And then all of a sudden with this strike, like you said, everybody in the city is thinking, how can I reduce my waste? And this is a perfect time to have this conversation. So I'm excited to see what our expert guests are going to say today.
Yeah. And I hope our listeners tune in and call in, because you guys always add so much context to the conversation. Again, the number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, keep those comments coming in the chat. And we have our trio of news stories. Kevin, you're going to jump right in.
Yeah, story number one. It was a violent, deadly holiday weekend in Philadelphia, unfortunately. Just before 1 a.m. this morning, Monday morning, there was a mass shooting at a party on a narrow one-way street in the Grays Ferry neighborhood. Three young men were killed and nine others were injured in the shooting. Yeah. One suspect has been taken into custody. Here was Police Commissioner Kevin Bethel talking to reporters at the scene.
This is coward, wannabe thug stuff. It's hard to understand why individuals engage in this behavior, but as we do in all of our investigations, we will get to the root cause and we will bring those individuals to justice.
So this mass shooting that Bethel was just talking about there comes on the heels of another mass shooting that happened early Saturday morning. That was outside of a club, again in South Philadelphia, where an argument led to knives being pulled, which led to gunfire, which left eight people wounded. This was at the Seven Elements Late Night Lounge, which is on the second floor of the Dung Phat Plaza at 11th and Washington. You might know this shopping center. There's a lot of great Vietnamese restaurants there, including Pho 75. Our news partners at Channel 6 Action News reported that the bar was operating well past the legal closing time, and the city has now moved to revoke the business license for these multiple code violations that were happening at that establishment.
Yeah, tragic weekend. And just to give you some context here, I mean, homicides in Philadelphia are down about 10% compared to this time last year. Shooting incidents are down 24%, and the number of shooting victims are also down 8%. But I remember back in May, we were tossing around doing a show on the sharp reduction in crime in Philadelphia. We was like, oh, yeah, we're going to do this. But it was before the summer began. Right. And we said, let's pause. Let's see if we can get through the 4th of July and keep this trend. Then we'll do the show. But unfortunately, with the warm weather comes this type of thing. And when we were talking about, you know, just the reduction in gun violence and homicides, we heard the mayor and all the safety folks. We also heard Commissioner Bethel all say, we do not want to go back to the way it was.
Right, right.
We want to keep the progress going.
And so as you noted, right, the trend overall is going in the right direction, but numbers are just numbers, right?
Yeah.
If you're a resident in a neighborhood where these shootings are commonplace, you don't care about the numbers. What you worry about is your livelihood and your safety.
Exactly.
For you and your family each and every day. So unfortunately, you know, there are still many neighborhoods in the city that are plagued with violence despite the city's best attempts.
And one shooting is too many.
Get them down.
One shooting is too many. And so our second story, of course, we led with the fact that the D.C. 33 workers strike continues for a seventh day, and there is no end in sight as of yet. And let me just give you the last offers that were on the table. Mayor Sherelle Parker's last public offer, 13.75% over 4 years. And it included the 5% raise that D.C. 33 got in the first year of her term. And then for the next three, she says 2.75% raise, followed by 2 years of a 3% raise. D.C. 33, they've said no. They got the 5% last year, but they want 5% every year for the next 3 years as well. So DC 33 posted online that it will begin raising money for a strike fund as it prepares for a longer work stoppage. They've also asked people to drop off food and water to DC 33 demonstrators. And I mean, the protests sort of persisted over the weekend as trash really started piling up. At the same time, you saw contractors coming to the trash drop off sites to pick stuff up. Yeah. You also saw city clip workers, the folks who typically clean out vacant lots and
graffiti,
things like
et
graffiti, and et cetera. They're trying to do the job of the DC 33 sanitation worker. So there's been a lot going on as the city tries to continue to provide services amid this strike.
Yeah, it's kind of a leverage play on both sides right now. Who can hold out longer? For the workers, I think they got a bit of a boost on 4th of July when LL Cool J and Jasmine Sullivan said, you know what, we're not going to perform at the big concert that happened on, was supposed to happen on Friday night, 4th of July, always on the Parkway. So they didn't show up to that. That got some national attention. Mm-hmm. You saw a lot on social media. But at the same time, as we noted in the show last week, the union members aren't going to get paid this Thursday. As
no.
Of now. So that's going to provide a lot of pressure for a deal to be reached from their side. How long can they hold out, as you said, as the trash continues to pile up in the city? Both sides are still, it seems, not close to a decision, but I guess back at the table today.
And in the middle of it all, residents of Philadelphia who are having to haul their trash. By the way, I'll note that the city has updated its list of trash drop-off sites. You can go to phila.gov/sanitation for more.
Story number three here. Inquirer had a nice feature on the actress Lisa Ann Walter. Mm-hmm. She plays the no-nonsense South Philly teacher Melissa Schmenti on Abbott Elementary. Here's a clip of her introducing herself to the camera crew for the first time on that show, Abbott Elementary.
Melissa Schmenti, second grade teacher. You Sicilian? Italian? You from South? Okay, you guys working with the cops because you got to tell me.
So Walter is in town.
She's so Philly, by the way. I got to say that. She's the most Philly character on the show, but go ahead.
Yeah, she's in town this weekend coming up at Helium, the comedy club, doing a trio of stories. And as part of the feature, the paper essentially asked her to map out like what she sees as the perfect day in Philadelphia. Now, you said she's so Philly, but actually she's not from Philly.
I know. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I thought there was a pretty striking tell in her list where she said, you know, part of her perfect day would be, quote, riding a bike on the path next to the Schuylkill River. Now, to me, if you don't know that that's called Kelly Drive, then you're not really somebody who can be offering advice on the perfect day in Philly. So, Cherry, I know you're not originally from here, but you've been in town for more than a decade at this point.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
you're a lived expert.
I've been told that I've been a naturalized Philadelphian at this point.
So, what's your list? What's your perfect day in Philly?
My
list?
Perfect day. First of all, I had the perfect day in Philly on Saturday. Started in my garden. Shout out to all the Philly urban gardeners on the roof. There's a picture of my husband and I out there putting up our net, trying to keep the birds away. We had a walk in the neighborhood to get some Wawa iced coffee. There's a $2 deal going on.
You're dropping Wawa references.
Yes. That's how you know. And then we had a family outing. We stopped at one of my favorite places, which is Cherry Street Pier, for some music. They had art. We got some Philly made ice cream, and a gorgeous view of the Delaware River. And, you know, then we popped over to Summerfest. There was some roller skating going on over there. And that was a perfect Philly day.
We had a full day.
We did. And then we ended up, you know, grilling outside in the backyard, you know, just living.
Love it. All right. I'll give you my
give
list.
Give me yours.
Quick.
Yes.
All right. So for me, you got to wake up early, have mm-hmm. a solo run down Kelly Drive.
Ooh, the
I,
right
you
word.
You got to get the endorphins going early in the morning. Mm-hmm. I'm always inspired by the rowers that are out, the other bikers, the runners. And you just kind of get
like
that
the perfect
that
Philly
energy,
view.
Right? Yeah. You get the view on Boathouse Row, all that. All right, then I'm going back to the neighborhood. I'm taking the family out to Bob's Diner in Roxborough.
Aww.
So you go healthy, and then you immediately go bacon, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And the kids love it, right? Everybody gets to pick their pancakes and all that. How about this? Family bike ride then in the Wissahickon. I live up by the Wissahickon Park. Love the park. So you gotta get the family out on the bikes on Forbidden Drive. Then maybe we're going back home, play a little wiffle ball.
Got the wiffle in there.
Then I'm going down South Philly. I'm going to take the family to a Cambodian restaurant. Love the big table Asian restaurant. The kids, you know, it's an adventurous menu. They always love it. Then we're gonna hit Marconi Plaza. Have a little water ice before we
look at that. Yeah. That's a lovely day, and it's so diverse. Look, you had through some Cambodian food in there.
Yep.
Got some outside. So get air. All of that. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. And by the way, the thing we don't love is the trash just piling up in the city. So we're going to talk about why do we as Americans produce so much garbage? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg. My co-host, Avi Wolfman-Arentz, is off today. So here's a question for you, Philly. What's the one thing we all make every single day, whether we're rich, poor, Democrat, or Republican, and no one wants to see it, smell it, or talk about it? Trash. Okay? And right now, thanks to the ongoing DC 33 Municipal Workers Union strike, it's front and center and on full display in Philadelphia. And when I drove around the past few days, I got to see the sheer volume of it all. And it got me wondering, why in the world do we produce so much garbage? And when you zoom out, the bigger problem isn't just that the bags are piling up. It's that we here in America produce more trash than any other country on earth. Why are we doing this? Oh, and the iconic blue recycling bin, it may be more theater than solution. So how do we get here and what do we do about it? We have two great guests with us to help us dig through some of these issues with our trash. And joining us via Zoom is Kate O'Neill, professor of environmental science, policy and management at the University of California, Berkeley. She is also the author of Waste, which looks at the political economy of our waste around the world. And in studio, we have Nick Esposito, founder and CEO of Circa and former litter czar for the city of Philadelphia. I want to say welcome to you, Kate and Nick. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
And for our listeners at home and elsewhere, we invite you to join the conversation. Do you try to limit how much trash you produce? And do you want to reduce your household waste? And if you have some tips, please share them with us. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, drop those comments in the live chat. So I want to start the conversation with both of you talking about this strike that we're dealing with. You know, I want to get your reactions to the strike itself, but also the politics behind it, because this is one of the first times in a long time that Philadelphians, no matter where you live, we're forced to deal with our very own waste. And so what I'm seeing online is that people say, pay the workers whatever you want. We don't want to deal with this. And so, Kate, then Nick, I want to get your thoughts on just the politics, the optics of this, and why you think it's having such a visceral reaction across the city.
Yeah, thanks, Cherry. You said you were driving around seeing the trash. I'm also wondering how it's smelling this hot summer month. I think that's also that very visceral part of trash that most of us just sort of forget about and don't look at and just put it away and hope it gets taken away. The trash strikes are a pretty big deal. Historically, they've been known to bring down city governments. People hate seeing this trash in the street. Margaret Thatcher in the UK in 1979, some people say she was elected on the back of a garbage strike, again with trash in streets. So I think it's a combination of things that lead to this: underpay, too much trash to pick up. A big deal for a lot of sanitation workers and their unions is actually worker safety as well. Sometimes they're put in very difficult situations. Sometimes they're threatened by drivers, you know. So a lot of things make sanitation workers incredibly important. And yeah, there are, I think, around 20 million people around the world who make their living with trash. And so if something happens, if they're feeling unsafe, they're feeling underpaid, they can really make a difference.
Yeah, and Nick, I mean, you're here in the city. We live very close in very close neighborhood together. And so your sort of reaction to it and to the politics of it and why you think the city is having such a visceral reaction to this.
I mean, I looked at my own career, how I got into waste when I became Zero Waste and Litter Director. Actually, it started before that when I was at Parks and Rec. So I'm a proud DC 47 before. And when you see trash, you just can't look away. I mean, when you see what we're producing, what it starts to look like when it's decomposing and the smell, and then when we'll talk about where it actually goes, it is visceral. So that's why people are having this reaction. But I also want to remind people, though, if you think back to the beginning of the pandemic, I mean, a similar thing happened. There was like a 3 to 4 week trash delay because workers were sick, workers were out. It goes back to a lot of what the professor was talking about those working conditions of why people were out. So we kind of lived through this not too long ago and had this reaction. And I think that what I'm, from the politics side of it, what I'm really loving seeing from my fellow Philadelphians and neighbors is this support of the workers. It's cool to see people getting out there and say, not just give them the pay so they start picking up trash again, because it's not just about the sanitation workers. There's a whole union that does many, many things, from the drinking water that you have to the public safety that we have, from our streets, how they're paved. Like, those people are all on strike too. So there's a larger picture here, but it's just cool to see in mass people saying, it's not just about I just wanted this strike to be over so I can get my trash cleaned up. It's like, we see the injustice, we see the problems with this, and these people deserve a fair shake, because now you're seeing what they pick up every day.
And Nick, a quick follow-up, because, you know, I think a lot of people did not know that this pay disparity existed with our sanitation workers. And Kate, you can probably provide, you know, context to this globally, but people did not know. And then just on social media, they've effectively been able to tell a lot of those stories. And folks are sort of like, you know, outraged in the sense that they know how hard this job really is. So do you think this sort of is opening the eyes, I guess, of folks to really see like the impact of our own waste on the people, our fellow Philadelphians?
I certainly, and I'm so happy that you're not hearing people say, and this is like maybe the past of this, of saying like, well, they have benefits and they have health insurance and what do I get? You know, there are people are saying when they find out what they actually make, it's stark. And I mean, when I first became Zero Waste and Litter Director, one of the first things I did was I went out on trash trucks and I worked the day just picking up trash because I wanted to see what it felt like. And, you know, I wasn't unknown to operations before. I worked in operations when I was in Parks and Rec, and they pick up a lot of trash in our parks as well. So I was familiar with it. But when you're on a trash route and you see what they're doing house after house after house, it is backbreaking work. And to think that, yeah, the average, I think they said, and back when I did this was 2007, I think the pay was like low 30s that people started at.
Yeah.
So even that they've gotten up into the mid 40s, they're making their very good cases. Like when, you know, the president of the union was saying, you have people fixing water mains, they can't pay their water bill. You have people, you know, helping out or working at the airport, they can't afford a plane ticket. So this is, you know, overdue to right size. And I said this even when I was back in government, these people should be paid so much more. And then at that point, you can also make the job, and I'm really excited to talk about with this program, making the job more interesting and more engaging for the materials management that you're doing, not just picking stuff up and throwing it in the back of a truck.
Yeah, that's what they're doing. And sort of, you know, Kate, you want to comment on that globally, sort of these disparities in pay, something that such a vital service, people being paid such low wages.
Yep. It's really subsistence wage in a lot of different parts of the world. But a lot of people do it partly because something we don't think about much is that when people are picking up waste in a city in India or Brazil off the streets that people have left out, sometimes they're going through, they're picking up what's valuable, they're taking the waste that's compostable and feeding it to animals. There are a lot of different ways in which we just kind of see that trash being picked up and taken away, and then we separate out our recycling as something different. So, you know, it's really complicated.
Yeah.
But I think that there's ways in which around the world people are now recognizing waste work as critical, and really, you know, the functioning of a city depends on it.
Yeah. Yeah, we're starting to see that. I want to bring in a caller. We have Andrea from West Philly on the line. Andrea, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yes, hi. Thank you so much. I am in public health, and I obviously, you know, individuals should, I think, take responsibility for trying to produce less waste. But honestly, in my mind, this problem is a lot bigger, and it starts at the corporate level. And unfortunately, we are in a situation right now where there is little to no federal regulation and certainly moving towards less of it as we go forward. What can, you know, what sort of businesses can we sort of like start to think about creating and private industries about where individuals can sort of tackle this at the larger level? And also, how do we work towards getting back to a place of regulation for the producers of the waste?
And we're going to put a pin in that, because I think Andrea raises some really good points, because policy is a big part of this. Thank you so much. That was Andrea from West Philly asking questions. How can we tackle this? How can we use policies to sort of put some of the onus back on some of these corporate trash creators? By the way, if you want to join our conversation, the question of the day is, do you try to limit your how much trash you produce? Do you? Try at home. And do you want to reduce your household waste? And if so, what are some of your tips to doing that? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And I wanted to sort of read some facts here, because the U.S. creates about 268 million tons of waste every year. That's roughly 1,600 pounds of trash per person annually, three times the global average. I was really shocked to hear these numbers. And Kate, could you paint a picture for us? How much trash are we really generating in the United States, and why?
Well, I think you had the answer there. It is a huge amount compared to a lot of other parts of the world, and I think it's what we buy and what we throw away. It's also what was sold. The caller asked about, well, what are the corporate actors involved? And those are the people who are selling us, who are marketing to us. Single-use plastics, disposable everything, plastic bags, you know, buy so much food, you know, you need to buy all of this food and keep it in the fridge and you'll need it and use it. You know, there's a lot of that side of the things that we are sold that lead us to produce too much trash that has helped create the problem in the first place.
Yeah, think about all the Amazon packages that come to folks every day, and people throw out all the packaging. For the most part. You know, Nick, could you help us understand Philadelphia's litter profile, like, or trash profile? How much are we producing here?
Yeah, so the last estimates that I saw were about 1.5 million tons. So it's usually about a ton per person in the city of Philadelphia. That's both kind of trash and recycling that we are producing here in the city. And yeah, I just to get back to what I loved how you guys opened this up when you were talking with, when Kevin said this, he said, you know, you guys were already planning on doing this show before.
Yes.
Because it's such an issue. And I thought that was so telling, and that's so powerful, because yes, we're seeing this and it's an issue, but this is all the time that we have to think about this. And I also just wanted to comment on, I've seen a lot of people in my community on social media saying things like, I don't want to scab. I don't want to use other systems. I want to support the workers, which 100%, you want to support the workers. But really, when you break down what these people do every day, the sanitation workers, and where these things go, is really what they do is they pick the stuff up and take it somewhere where it goes to get processed. So that's the process that they're doing. So you can have many different systems that it could be going to different places for the what the sanitation workers are picking up and where they're taking it, right? They're that piece of this larger system that your previous caller just really, really so smartly kind of tapped into. It's a larger system. So where the trash is going right now is the city has a contract predominantly with Waste Management, or WM, so Waste Management, the big corporation. And they have about, I think, 60% of the trash goes into a landfill that's north of the city. And then another 40% of trash goes to the incinerator in Chester, which you might have done programs on this before. It's a huge environmental justice issue. Chester has 3 or 4 times the rate of asthma that most other communities have. And then the recycling goes to Waste Management as well. So there's just pretty much one corporation that's running all of the different ways that we're kind of getting rid of our trash.
And so our sanitation workers, the folks who are, you know, a chunk of the folks who are on strike right now, they're the folks who just basically get it from us and take it into and put it into the system.
Exactly.
Question about recycling, because we did a show on this, and people were really shocked to learn that most of the items they put in that blue bin do not actually get recycled. What happens to those?
Well, I mean, there's different, it's talking about the different materials you put in. So things like cardboard, you talked about those Amazon packages. Amazon needs a lot of cardboard, so they like to get the recycled content. Also, there are some federal guidelines for how much recycled content should be in like a cardboard box. So cardboard, aluminum, like cans that we have, those things are getting recycled. There's markets for it. And I mean, that's the equation of recycling, right? If there's a market and there's a material and a way to process it, you have recycling. So those have good ones. Glass is another one. Think glass. When you think to where recycling started, people think glass. Most of your glass in the city is not getting recycled. It gets crushed in the truck. By the time it goes through the whole process where they could actually recollect it, it's so contaminated, they mostly use it for landfill cover. So you're not seeing much glass. And then, as they've pointed out over and over, there is some plastics that do have a market, like number one plastic, that's a plastic water bottle. But for the most part, because, and again, you put it on, which is so unfair on the consumer, they call it wish cycling, because people see the chasing arrows and they just assume, well, this is recyclable. Well, it's not the person's fault that they assume that. It's the corporations that are doing some greenwashing that make it seem like these things are recyclable. So all these different plastics that you're throwing into your bin, just because it's plastic, it's probably not getting recycled.
And explain greenwashing for folks who might not have heard that term. It was a new term for me when I was preparing for the show.
And greenwashing is, you know, most people want to protect the environment. Most people care about, and that's why people participate in recycling and they do things like that. So sometimes these corporations will, sometimes, too many times, will exploit that fact, and they'll make it seem like things are being recycled. They'll have, you know, plausible deniability, like, oh, we thought it was going to this place. And then people believe that that's true, and then they find out the truth, like you were getting at, that 9% of plastics ever produced have been actually recycled. So recycling plastic is not a way out of the plastic production crisis that we've created as human beings. But they make you feel that, because you want to feel that as a human being, because you want to feel that you're doing good while also buying the things you need for your family.
Yeah, and I want to remind you, you can participate in the conversation. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And then the question is, do you try to limit how much trash you produce? Do you want to reduce your household waste? If so, what are some of your tips? I'll read a couple comments before I throw this back to Kate. Email from Gloria, who says, I only produce one bag of trash per month. I compost and recycle. I do not have a cat or a baby and avoid purchasing things that are in packaging. I'm amazed at the amount of trash here and that it'll be picked up. Other places I've lived limit the amount of trash allowed. That's from Gloria, who has that comment. I'm like, one bag of trash. Wow, Gloria, you're doing great. Jerry on YouTube says, I subscribed to a composting service about 2 years ago, about $25 per month, monthly pickup. I got a 5-gallon bucket with a lid that I keep in my kitchen. No odor, less trash, and less odor. And so, Kate, I want to bring you back into the conversation, because you heard from Nick, what happens to the trash, what happens to the recycling here in Philadelphia. I want you to kind of put that into context with the bigger system, because our folks are sort of getting the, we have our sanitation workers who are on strike right now, getting the trash, putting them into systems, but there's also a global system that's sort of floating around. Could you explain that to us?
Yeah. I mean, I think Nick really brought up the issue with recycling and markets. Up until about, 7 years ago, 2018, most of our plastic that people put in the blue bin went to China, like nearly all of it. And this was something people didn't really know. China was using it as a feedstock in its rapidly growing economy. And you know, this was great. We didn't have to really build much recycling capacity at home. People, the recycling companies, local governments made money off that. And then all of a sudden, China stopped. We were sending too much stuff. It was too dirty. And they were just like, no, we're not taking it anymore. And we were like, help, you know, what do we do? So all of a sudden, we've got all of this plastic that's being sort of piling up in our, often in ports, and but also now in landfills. And I think we've had a really hard time catching up. As Nick mentioned, very little plastic, certainly other than like the plastic bottles, is recyclable, and almost none of it more than once. So this global context means that it's become very difficult to deal with our plastic. We do still send it to Turkey, Malaysia, but all of those countries are starting to say no, and no, quite, they really do mean no. And there's also an international treaty now on the way that is going to help control plastic, plastic waste, plastics in the ocean. But won't be able to tackle, I think, the fundamental part of the problem, which is too much plastic production in the first place.
Yeah, and by the way, Bearded Giant says on YouTube, the scam of the plastics industry recycling, and then puts the little quotes around there, is a huge contributor to all of this. Shame. That's what Bearded Giant says on YouTube. And so to explain to us why many of these countries that we relied on for so long have sort of said, you know what, no more America. We're not taking your trash anymore. We don't want your plastics. Why did they sort of like, you know, give us the finger when it comes to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we did a really good job of kind of overplaying our hands, both in terms of the quantity of plastic, a lot of other things. I mean, if you look at most waste, it goes abroad. I mean, one of the things that we're really interested in these days is textile dumping too, like old clothes that you give to Goodwill often wind up in Africa in places where they overwhelm local markets. But so a lot of countries are just saying, nope, we it's affecting our markets, it's affecting our production. We don't need this anymore. It's really too much to process. And of course, the other big one is electronic waste that we've also traditionally shipped overseas for dismantling and recycling or refurbishment. And while that has worked to some extent, it's become very problematic in terms of quantities and contamination.
Yeah. And so, Nick, when you hear this, so what are we doing with all this waste that we're a city like Philadelphia is producing this large volume? What are we doing with it? And how does it affect our environment, our health, and all those different aspects?
Yeah. And as the professor pointed out, I mean, it feels like the rest of the world's kind of moving on without us sometimes when it comes to waste, even though in our country, and especially our city of Philadelphia, we have some incredibly innovative companies that are doing great things to keep that material local. In our system. So I do want to point out, I'm on the board, and I was a co-founder of an organization called Circular Philadelphia. It's all like the circular economy, zero waste type businesses here in the city, which when I tell other cities how many we have, they're shocked that we have all of this at our disposal. So Circular Philadelphia just created this really great guy called Resource Philly. So resourcephilly.org. And you can go on and you can put in different materials and find out what your options are here on the local level. And like I said, I hope most of your listeners are going to go there and be like, this is remarkable that we have all of these options here in the city of Philadelphia. As I pointed out earlier, right now, we're doing kind of the lowest common denominator. We're just putting all this stuff curbside and it's going to a couple facilities that this large multinational corporation, Waste Management, runs. And then the recycling is going to other areas or other parts of the world, as was just pointed out. And then we're burying it or we're burning it. And those are two environmental justice issues. We have a lot of other options here in the city of Philadelphia that we can utilize. And I'd be happy to talk through a couple of them. To reduce our waste, to better manage those materials and keep those materials local within this system.
Yeah. And so give us an example and then we can pick it up on the other side of the break.
Sure. I mean, you already had people point out around compost. You know, we have two incredible compost companies here in the city and then some on the outskirts as well that you have a compost service that you can utilize that they'll pick up your compost and do that. When I brought up glass, you know, glass, it's vexing. You would think that we should be able to recycle glass, but the way it's picked up, we can't do that. But there's a great organization called Bottle Underground. They collect glass, they turn it into other materials, or they'll actually figure out ways to get it responsibly recycled. So we have those options here. I'm happy. I could go off the top of my head for a million more that we have. The other two I'll point out that I think we're also extremely blessed to have in the city is construction and demolition recycling. Most cities don't have construction and demolition recyclers within their city limits. We have two here in the city of Philadelphia, between Burns Recycling, which has been around for 40 years, and Revolution Recovery, which has been around for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And they're managing that material on the local level, which obviously things like illegal dumping, like a lot of that material that ends up getting dumped, that's recyclable material, things that are coming out of all the houses that we're building.
Do people sort of go pick that up, though? Because I mean, even in, you know, where folks are dropping off things at the drop-off sites, they're dropping off, you know, things that could be recyclable, tables, chairs, metal things, construction debris. I mean, all of these things. Should that have been put someplace else? And will that fall between the cracks?
Yeah, so it should be put somewhere else. And again, there's great things like that. We have Resource Philly out now that people can see where they can put their materials. And there's many different options for the stuff that you're saying. It's fun that we can do like a whole trash sorting of like, you know, like waste characterization of where it can go.
Yeah, and we're going to leave it right there as we tee up for the other side of this break. We're going to talk about solutions on the other side of the break. We're also going to talk about some of the policies that could be put in place to reduce our waste and also get some of these corporations to get some buy-in, maybe put some skin in the game and help people reduce waste. So our question of the day is this: do you try to limit how much trash you produce? Do you want to reduce your household waste? Give us some of your tips. You can call 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg. In the midst of the sanitation worker strike, many residents are realizing just how much trash we make. And so this hour, we're looking at ways to reduce our waste and make recycling more efficient. We're looking for your ideas as well. Do you try to limit how much trash you produce? Do you want to reduce your household waste? If so, give us some tips. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube, drop those comments in the chat. I'll read a couple of those comments. Siri on YouTube says, I do try by recycling as much as I can, limiting my consumerism and donating useful items I don't need anymore. I'd like to do more, though. Thank you, Siri, for that. Also, Ellen says, in the Netherlands, the garbage truck weighs the trash before they take it, and then they send you a bill. Also, I wish people were better stewards of trash. My neighbors stack bottles, for example, in a brown paper bag. It rains, it's windy, and it's all over the street. Thank you for that, Alan. Let me reintroduce our guest. We have Nick Esposito, founder and CEO of Circa, which builds circular economy e-commerce platforms. He's also the former City of Philadelphia Zero Waste and Litter Director. We also have Kate O'Neill, Professor of Environmental Science, Policy, and Management at the University of California, Berkeley. And so I want to sort of talk about the type of policies that can be put in place. You know, we heard from one of our YouTube listeners that, look, you know, people have had their waste weighed in certain countries. They send you a bill. And what better incentive but money and a bill would get you to reduce your waste? What are some of the policies that can be put in place to sort of encourage people on an individual level to reduce their waste, Kate?
Yeah, well, I just should say that I've been making lots of notes about what's going on in Philly because I think you've got a tremendous set of examples for other places as to what can be done. I think as far as policies go, they're a lot of local. I mean, I work quite closely with the Ecology Center, which does a lot of the recycling in Berkeley. And they have worked with the city council there to have a rule put in place that, for instance, people pay a 25-cent fee if they don't have a reusable cup. Restaurants and cafes are required to have reusable cutlery and plates and foodware if people are sitting down to eat. So I think that there's, if you look all over the country, that there's so many really great local ideas. I think the problem in the U.S., which is very different from somewhere like Europe, is that there is very little guidance from above. States like California are doing a really good job, but when you look at the federal system, there's almost nothing compared with Europe, where they have really detailed and integrated policy platforms. On like the circular economy is a really good example.
Yeah. And when you hear this, we have done quite a few things locally. I know we have recycled bags. We have to have reusable bags. We've done a lot of things. And yet it feels like the amount of trash we're producing continues to get larger and larger, Nick. What other things could we be doing to reduce our waste?
Yeah, and as Kate said, I mean, it's both on the federal and the city level, I'd say. I feel like things have just been stagnated in that respect. So I'd say on the federal level, you have things, I think Kate was alluding to this, like extended producer responsibility that they have in Europe. Basically, as a concept where the brands have to pay based off of the packaging that they create or the waste that they create.
So the corporations themselves selling you things have to pay.
And here's the thing that's so frustrating. They're American corporations that are paying these fees in Europe. Like, they know how to do it. And actually, when you get a pair of Nikes now and you see, like, Nikes have a lot less packaging than they did maybe like a couple years ago, that's because of those extended producer responsibility laws. So they're already making changes to the corporate structure based off of what's happening in other parts of the world. Asia has a lot of extended producer responsibility laws. There's a few that have propped up in the United States, I believe Maine, California, Oregon. have enacted these laws. New York was trying to get one passed. So those are things on that level that you basically, like, you want to create all this trash through mm-hmm. your production. Well, then you have to pony up a little bit. You have to pay for it, because it's not fair that the taxpayer in these individual cities has to deal with the trash that you're creating. Gets back to that original comment. The other piece on the local level that's been frustrating is, yeah, I was part of that team that got the plastic bag ban passed. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of litter and trash around Philadelphia usually, but right now even more so. I hope that people see a reduction, and not just I hope. We've done the reports, we've done the studies. There was a drastic reduction in the amount of plastic bag litter and plastic bag use in the city of Philadelphia based off of that law. Right after that, Circular Philadelphia went, when I was still a staff member there, and we created a whole policy paper on how to then work on other single-use plastics, like those clamshell containers or plastic for things like that, that you might find coffee cups that you find that are single-use. We have that already already mapped out. There's this other great initiative through the Sustainable Business Network called Philly Unwrapped and Ecosystems that have a whole playbook on how you can get off single-use plastic, but we need those policies to follow. And I've been disappointed in this administration that it just seems like you're just shouting to the air for these policy recommendations and they're not being listened to. All they're doing is spending their money cleaning up rather than getting to the root systemic cause of the issue.
And dig into that a little bit, because this administration, Mayor Sherelle Parker has said cleanest, greenest, safest, those cleanest, greenest, pretty big deal, pretty important. DC 33 is a big part of that. And you say that, just cleaning up is not enough. What more should they be doing to sort of think about waste and, I guess, efficiencies and so many other aspects of sanitation?
Well, they just put out this request for information, which honestly kind of frustrates me, because they put this out like every time the new contract comes up. So this contract is coming up for the waste and recycling in the city of Philadelphia. My vision, and I'm shared through a lot of different people, especially at Circular Philadelphia, is we can create a contract that benefits all of these local companies, the compost companies we have here already, mm-hmm. the construction demolition companies we have here already, the, even something like reusable container. There's all of these options that if we were putting public money towards, and this would not take away from union workers. I think sometimes union workers, I remember when I first started, when I was on the floor of the streets department, and somebody walked by and they were like, oh, that's the spy. They kept calling me the spy. They're like, because I was like the zero waste guy. And actually a union person came up like, I don't like this whole zero waste thing. That means no jobs for us. I'm like, no. You're going to pick up the same amount of stuff. It's just going to go to different places. And guess what? Your job is going to be that much better because you're bringing order to this chaotic system. So you're not showing up at a house and there's 10 bags of trash. Half of them are ripped open by animals. There's a mattress. Like, if you were able to really get the buy-in from the residents, because you have these better systems set up, you're creating these better ways to work with the local private sector here, we can create a much more sustainable, a much greener system than we have now. But what we've seen out of this administration so far has been constant cleanup. And it's kind of just,
you got to do more.
You got to do more. I mean, that's just, it's performative. It's like, it's if your house was caving in, right? The roof.
Yeah.
Would you call cleaning services to come clean up the debris?
No, you got to deal with
you
the
fix
roof.
The roof, yeah, right? Like, that's the thing. So that's what we have to start working towards. And there's a lot of examples in other cities, things that we've done that we can build off of. And, it's hoping that, again, this is, let's support the workers. Let's get that 5% raise that they want year after year. And then let's also start talking about these better systems and hold the administration accountable to it.
Yeah, I want to bring in a caller. We have Miguel from Fairmount on the line. Miguel, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Just a comment regarding the way in which we dispose of our trash. I'm sure everybody has walked the streets of Philadelphia on any trash day, and we can see how people just discard things improperly. We complain right now that we don't have trash pickup, but I'll bet you that a lot of us do not consider that these people are breaking their back because we are not doing our part properly. And, I think it comes down to if we don't dispose of our trash properly, we should get a ticket. I have seen my neighbors just putting out like full boxes and they're blowing all over the place. And then the poor trash people have to be chasing these boxes. Later on, we complain that, oh, my God, they do a terrible job, but we don't do our part. On the other hand, we have these big companies inundating the city with a lot of boxes. I don't know how many of you have received a small item in a medium-sized box.
Yeah.
These companies should have a tax.
Yeah. That is Miguel from Fairmount on the line. And Nick, just a point that Miguel was talking about. I remember doing a story on the trash police in Philadelphia where they used to go around and they did write tickets for people. I don't think that worked.
I mean, yeah, I mean, those kind of punitive things don't, because there's a low level ticket. Sometimes people don't pay it. I mean, the thing is, you're not going to like ticket your way out of this issue. It's a systemic problem. So they still do that. People still get tickets for putting trash out early. I mean, I think it's even harder now because there's a lot of trust that's been lost. But to your, you know, to the point that the caller made, I mean, it can't just be put on the right. We need systems set up that make sense, that people can then follow the rules. You can't ask people to follow the rules in a dysfunctional system.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. So,
yeah. I want to bring in another caller. We have Tony from media on the line. Tony, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in the 90s, and I feel like there was so much pressure on us or excitement to learn how we were going to recycle. And they trained us really well. And then it ended up being like this. You know, is it really that individuals are going to make a difference? I mean, I know at the top of the hour you were talking about companies. I mean, I really feel like they're responsible. But I just wanted to comment on the education part, because I feel like it was almost a failure. Or do you think that that training was great for us?
Yeah, and you're talking about training on how to recycle?
Well, not training, but like in school, in the, you know, I graduated in 2000. You know, that's when we started doing a lot of recycling, and they were very, you know, excited about teaching us that. And I feel like there was a lot of focus on it. And then it turns out that we weren't really doing it all that well.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That's Tony from media. Kate or Nick, do you want to take that, Kate? Because I do know I read up on this, and I think you were quoted in some of these articles. Part of the reason why some of the countries started rejecting American recyclables was because of the contamination within that. Was our training bad? Like, what sort of, where is the disconnect here that sort of got us to this place where our recyclables, our trash is being rejected?
Yeah, I grew up in the 90s too, and I have a pretty vivid memory of a lot of, well, I was in my 20s in the 90s, but, you know, that was when recycling was really being kind of introduced in a big way in a lot of cities. You know, I think people are just incredibly confused. I talk about wish cycling a lot, which is what Nick brought up earlier, the contamination. And people are like, what do I do? Do I wash out? Do I have to put my mayo jar in the dishwasher? You know, when is the pizza box too greasy to be recycled? And I think people are really like, do I throw it out? Do I put it in? A lot of people are like, oh, I just want to recycle this anyway because it might be recycled. I want to do the right thing. And, you know, education is one of the answers for that. You know, kids are really good with, you know, stopping people from litter and talking about that. And then it's how you then demonstrate to people. It's that transparency and accountability piece that's been missing for so long that we're actually doing something with what we're throwing away and putting in the recycling bins.
Yeah, and I think to pick up on what Kate's saying, I mean, it comes down to the design of the program, right? You have to design these things. So I'd be remiss not to mention what Circa Systems builds. So we build our main product that we have right now, the e-commerce platform, is called Unless Kids. It's a way that parents can buy toys that their kids want. And then when they're done with it, they can buy new stuff. And all the stuff that they bought before, plus other things that they have, they can hit the cycle button next to it. So when we show up to your house with new stuff, we take the old stuff away. We take it back to our warehouse. We can get 7 to 8 uses out of it. Our tagline is like, why make a million things to try to sell them a million times when you can make 100,000 things and sell them a million times? And by the time that it gets to it can't be used anymore, it goes to a responsible recycler, Rabbit Recycling, right here in the city that we use. And we know it's actually being dismantled and being recycled in the proper way. So these things are possible. We can set up these systems. They have to make sense for the user. You have to have the right design. And the same thing goes, when I was in city government, I thought the same way. These are products that we're designing. And if you don't design the system to make sense and work, and that, you know, people need to do some things, right? But you have to kind of meet the person halfway where they can't depart or have to do too much work to make the system work. The system has to kind of balance out. And that's what we need on all these different levels, the ways that you can figure out how do we stop the waste from being created in the first place? And then how do we responsibly get rid of it? And again, it's an entire systemic way.
And then get the corporate actors also some skin in the game. Yep. I want to try to squeeze in one more caller. We have John from Hamilton, New Jersey on the line. John, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment? And can you please keep it brief? We're wrapping up the show.
Yeah. My comment is
I think we lost John from Hamilton, New Jersey. Are you still there? I think we lost John from Hamilton, New Jersey, but he had an interesting recycling plant in New Mexico, Santa Fe, that he wanted to talk about. Sorry we couldn't get you on. I just want to sort of get your thoughts as we get ready to wrap up the show. So how should we sort of be thinking about this? Because I feel like there's sort of a political momentum that could be building now, that everybody's mind is sort of thinking about this, not just the pay of the workers, because we're going to be talking about blue collar workers and fair pay for a while, but also sort of dealing with our waste. I mean, is this a political moment that we can use to sort of put new systems in place that would protect our workers, but also reduce our waste and get better systems in place? How do we sort of work the politics of this and think about the future, Nick and Kate?
Yeah, actually, last week I was on a call with a bunch of these people that I was talking about, all the different waste management or people that are doing sustainable materials management. And I was really impressed by what they were saying, because they were like, I don't want to exploit this moment, right? This is about the workers. They deserve this fair raise. We don't want to be like, oh, use our systems instead. Don't use that stupid city system. They saw the need for the workers. And I thought that was really admirable, what they were thinking. And I think what we can do now as people listening to this is, like, again, please go to something like a resourcephilly.org and go check out your different options that you have. Support those companies with your wallet. But then also we have to renew the pressure on the mayor's office to say, we need better policies. Cleaning up is not enough. We have to put the policies in place to make the city not just cleaner, not just greener, but more sustainable when it comes to our materials.
And last word, you have about 30 seconds, Kate.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's an ongoing struggle, sadly. One of the things, plastic bags, for instance, a lot of state governments are restricting cities and jurisdictions from actually enacting restrictions. So that's complicated. But we can fight against that as well. Colorado had one of those sorts of policies as a state, and they wound that back. So citizen action, not just sort of consumer action, is really important as well. Keep our politicians on their toes.
Yeah, I like that. So many comments from folks. Shout out to Ray, Katrina, Matthew, Bobby, Kate from New Jersey, Nick, Lloyd, Esty. So many people gave some great ideas. And so I want to say thank you to Nick Esposito, founder and CEO of Circa, for being on the show. Also, thank you to Kate O'Neill, professor of environmental science, policy, and management at the University of California, Berkeley. Thank you both for sharing your perspectives on this important topic today.
Thanks for having the show, Jerry.
Yes, and thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, Al Banks, and Tina Calique. Thank you for engineering today's show. Our executive producer and my guest host earlier today was Kevin McCory. And from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you so much for joining me and for listening.